I'm Meredith.
And I'm Robin.
And this is My TV Family. Today we're talking about our time at the Austin Film Festival.
Welcome back to My TV Family. As Meredith mentioned, this week we're talking about everything and everyone.
So many ones
that we saw at the recent Austin Film Festival here in Austin, Texas.
Imagine that.
Believe it or not. But before we get to those scintillating details, I think we wanted to talk with some hot topics.
Yep.
And there is no hotter topic than people's sexiest man alive.
I know. It's my favorite time of year.
This year, the winner, deservedly so, I would say.
Yeah.
Is Idris Elba.
Yeah. A little late, I think.
I concur. I mean, well, and let's not talk about who it was last year.
Oh, no.
Moving on. But yes, my boyfriend and all-time hall pass, Idris Elba, was chosen as people's sexiest man alive.
Yes.
Meredith, no less than three people sent this to our My TV Family account and to me personally. So, people are not sending me articles about politics or the newest scientific discoveries, but when Stringer Bell hits the cover of People magazine, people know that that is intel that I need.
Yeah, well, sounds like we're representing our brand well.
You know,
people know us for who we are.
I feel like it's accurate. So yeah, that's my kind of scoop. And you may recall, Idris Elba's career is far, wide, deep, and broad.
Yes.
And he may never be the next James Bond.
I know. I am like the leader of that band to get him on that.
I think it would be awesome. I have heard
Can I do a change.org petition? Or
I feel like you would have a lot of signatures.
Yeah.
I would be the first one. But I heard rumblings of a female James Bond. So it's a world gone mad, Meredith. I don't even know what to make of it, but I will be the first signature on your petition for Idris Elba as James Bond. I mean,
I know. Maybe he's better than that. I don't know.
You can fill out a tuxedo, though.
Yeah, he'll always be Charles Minor to me from The Office. He played a small role on The Office.
Classic.
And one of the roles he played was being the handsome man in The Office, and Angela and Kelly were always vying for his attention.
Yes.
And one of my favorite is Kelly used to hang out by Jim's desk because that's where Charles's office was. And then anytime he would say Kelly, which was the name of the secretary, she would run into the office and say, "Yes, Charles, you needed me." So that eventually he would get to the point, he'll say, "You needed me," so many times that he'll then trick him into thinking that he needs her. Yeah.
Yeah. I think when the announcement was made that he was going to get the Sexiest Man Alive award, I wonder what kind of like hardware and certificates that comes with. But
metal.
I think we all know what it comes with, Meredith. But Mindy Kaling, who portrayed Kelly Kapoor on The Office, tweeted some great little clips of her fighting with Angela over him and them shoving each other like out of rooms and into doors. And it's just so good. So Idris Elba, we may not have been eligible to vote for you, but we agree with this pick wholeheartedly.
Definitely.
We salute you. that was the hottest of hot topics, really.
Yeah.
So I think we will go on to what we are currently watching. Meredith, I feel like you put the work in this week. You want to tell us what you've been watching?
I did. And some that are a little bit out of character for me, too.
Ooh.
So you gave a little preview of The Bodyguard. And after you had mentioned The Bodyguard on our podcast, I'd heard like so many people talking about it. It must have just recently come out on Netflix.
I think so.
But The Bodyguard is a political thriller, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. And it was huge in the UK. So it's set in the UK.
Okay.
But it was huge. And I looked it up and it had the second largest average audience in the UK next to
Love Island.
Yes, Love Island. No, the World Cup last year. Oh. So it was like a big deal.
Okay.
I
like a big deal in the UK.
I know. And they said it's the biggest show right now since Downton Abbey. Like, okay. People really loved it there. And I guess since it's come out on Netflix, a lot of people are loving it here. So I thought I'd give it a try. This is not a show that I can watch by myself.
Okay.
It's definitely one I had to watch with my husband because I knew it was going to be intense. It's really suspenseful. Like, a lot of quiet moments where
something jumps out behind a closet.
And a lot of quiet moments that don't end up in anything, which is worse because then you don't know when it is going to be a
thing.
They're
always messing with you.
Yeah. So you're like, oh, that was resolved without any trouble. And then next thing you know, someone's head's being blown off and you're like, super. Oh, that's great. That one did not resolve well.
And that's that.
So it's a show about terrorism in the UK, and it follows one particular police officer as he protects the Home Secretary.
What would you say his job is exactly? Bodyguard.
Oh, right there in the title. I'm surprised, but I didn't know where you're going with that.
So he's a bodyguard. Go on.
Yes. And so it touches on all the things like PTSD, because he served in the war in Afghanistan. It talks about politics, obviously. There's some issues with his family.
Is this the guy from Game of Thrones?
Yes.
Okay.
So, yeah, the main actor, yes, he is from Game of Thrones.
Okay.
He has this ability to clench his jaw so that jaw muscle, you know what I'm talking about, just like
yes.
protrudes so far out. So you know for sure when something is going in his mind in it. That alone should get him an Emmy or whatever award, because the clenching of that jaw speaks volumes in this show.
Okay.
And it is, I really am enjoying it, even though.
This is shocking to me.
I know. It terrifies me to no end. Okay. And I'm really scared every time I'm watching it. But I think it's just a really well-made show that I'm willing to.
It's a little exciting.
Yeah, watch it one episode at a time. I can't take more than one.
Okay.
But I would recommend it.
Oh.
And I mean, I guess if you have some sensitivities, which I should just like make everyone know that like the violence is
pretty violent.
Yeah, like we watched someone get shot, and the blood that splattered on the other people around them.
All right.
Was so graphic and seemingly
I cannot believe you are watching this show.
So real. I know. It is very out of character, like I mentioned. So if you can handle that, I think it's worth it because it's an interesting thing. It's
so
an interesting
concept. I'm so
excited
that you are pushing yourself to watch violent and sexy TV.
Yes, I am growing up.
I, on the other hand, am like, is there something in a Nickelodeon cartoon well, that I could?
Yeah, to be honest, one of the shows I'm watching, also I've talked about it before, is Single Parents, and it is still making me laugh. I'm very concerned it's going to get off the air. It's going to get the axe, but
that's the worst.
I need more shows like that are just like The Good Place, making me laugh, keeping me happy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need more bodyguards, except for it's really good, so I'm sticking to it. But I do need some more lighthearted shows, and I need something where I can just like binge and like get into someone else's world.
Yep.
I just haven't figured out what is the right one for me right now. But
you are not alone. I'm hearing a lot of people who are into TV and TV critics and reviewers and pop culture mavens saying like there's so much TV, but there's nothing on. Yeah. Like people who are like, I've watched all of the stuff, give me new things.
Yeah.
So.
And right now I feel like I have a lot of week-to-week shows, mm-hmm. and I need another, I know.
Week-to-week.
But Single Parents being one of those, it's just like a really fun 30 minutes. A lot of the times you'll see all the parents sitting around a picnic table, which feels, and just like.
I can relate.
Yeah. Making jokes about their kids, and that's something that we personally do.
Never.
On a regular basis, so maybe that's why I like it. It's a setting that I understand.
As I'm like, there's nothing to watch, but I haven't watched that. And there's nothing to watch, but I don't know about that one. I'll have to add that to my viewing list.
In a world where you can binge, sometimes it is hard to take on a show that you have to watch week to week. But
yep.
But at the same time, I still do it. And another one of those, which is not a happy show, is Riverdale. It took another dark turn into like the dark arts.
Oh.
And.
You sticking with it?
Yeah.
Like witchcraft? Satan worship?
They're like alluding to that kind of stuff, and they're playing like some kind of Dungeons and Dragons, but like like some role playing game that has turned into more Slender Man type.
Oh, no, no, no. That sounds terrifying.
Yeah. You know, I have really strong concerns about people who are watching this and like the teens who are watching this. And I don't want them to emulate anything that they see. I also think the show is really ridiculous in like the
what?
In the parent or the adult to children relationships.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe I'm naive, but this some of this stuff just feels like just way beyond any of my understanding.
Okay.
And so
well, it is not a show known for its restraint. Like I feel like much of it is like over the top, right?
But I just think it goes beyond, but like into a part where I just think is like not even fun, unrealistic, right? I'm like, I love...
So you've stopped watching altogether?
Nope. We'll see you next week, Riverdale.
We've had just about enough of your nonsense, and I'll see you.
It's just like one of those things where I still want to find out who is doing what and who's behind this. Just like practicing. When I watched Pretty Little Liars, again, another teen, unrealistic, really ridiculous plot storyline. But I'm like, I gotta know who A is, and I need to know who's behind this. So,
stay tuned to see who's practicing prison witchcraft.
I know the teen shows can suck me in. It's just probably right around
my a new one for you,
right around my intellect level. So, and then the last thing that I just kind of jumped into is I went on YouTube and watched some clips from Busy Tonight.
Your girl, Busy Phillips.
My girl, Busy Phillips, has her own late night show. And it's basically taking what made her Instagram stories famous and popular and trying to take all those concepts and put it in a show.
Yeah.
It has all the very uncomfortable learning processes of that all the late night talk show hosts went through.
Okay,
like,
yeah.
I don't know if you remember when Jimmy Fallon.
Finding your voice.
Yeah. When Jimmy Fallon started, he was so awkward and was really painful.
Yeah.
And same with Seth Meyers and like James Corden took like a minute. And same with Stephen Colbert. They all took like a good year or two to get into a spot where they found the rhythm and they seemed comfortable in doing what they're doing. And Busy doesn't. I think she does an okay job, but there's definitely some moments where I'm like a little cringe,
okay,
a little embarrassed for her.
Some growing pains.
Yeah, she doesn't care how I feel about it, but
well, she does care, and like I think that's a big leap to take something from Instagram stories to a 4 or 5 nights a week talk show, right?
Yeah, and it's a bit of an unusual format and setting, so I think because it's on Bravo, they're like trying to switch things up a little bit. It's a lot more like chatting with your friends on the couch,
okay,
instead of an interview. Okay. And so a lot of times she's sitting on the couch with her legs tucked up under her, just like, oh, this is just a casual late night chat with my friends. Which I think allows for them to talk about things that they wouldn't normally talk about in a talk show.
Okay.
They talked about with Kristen Bell the menstrual cup, so
you
know,
that's something.
That is something that's a little little more friend-to-friend chat. They've had, like, amazing A-list celebrity guests. They had Julia Roberts. She had Kristen Bell. She had John Stamos. I don't know. The list goes on, but...
You had me at John Stamos, Meredith.
I know. Always. I should have started with John Stamos.
Full stop.
The other thing that's a little unusual, that it airs on Sunday through Wednesday...
Okay.
I don't quite understand.
There's no rules in the TV anymore, Meredith.
The purpose of that. I think this show will be great for, like I said, those things that you wouldn't, if you really like pop culture and like stories about celebs.
Yeah.
It'll be great to go watch those like 4-minute clips.
I can see stuff like that going viral like very quickly.
Yeah. On YouTube. I don't know that I did watch one show start to finish, and the start and the finish were a little... a little uncomfortable, but the interviews were fun and interesting. So I feel like if you can go on YouTube and find those clips,
the bookends need a little work.
Yeah.
Okay.
But like, that's no judgment fair. Here. We
well, and we let the dudes, like you said, have a year to find their footing. So let's hope that her network gives her the time to do the same.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, it takes us all a moment to get into something new. So really no judgment, but as someone whose job it is to review these things for people, I'm just giving you my honest opinion.
You're welcome. Busy.
All right. So that I think covers what I've been watching. Do you want to share with us what you're watching?
I'd love to. So as you know, I distanced myself from Big Mouth in our last episode.
Well, sort of. You said
Don't tell people you heard it from me.
Yeah.
Here's what I don't want.
I can't in good faith recommend it, but I'm still gonna watch it. So.
Let's roll back the tape on that one. Yeah, I think my concern is that someone would say, oh, Robin likes Call the Midwife, as do I, and Robin likes Big Mouth, I'll give it a try, which is a little poem I just wrote.
Yeah.
Anyway, it remains absolutely outrageous and ridiculous, and we're watching season two, and it's obscene and dirty and filthy, as I have said time and time again, but yeah. It is hysterical, and my favorite characters are quickly, like, it's rising to the top that my favorites are all the females.
What?
I know, which is funny, because they're like, boys, and boners, and puberty, and boys, but the female voices are just, like, the best. And my favorite is this little nerdy, meek girl at the middle school named Missy. And she's voiced by Jenny Slate, who is just one of my all-time faves. But she's just hilarious and wears overalls. And I just love her to pieces. And then, of course, the amazing Maya Rudolph as the hormone monstress. She's just fantastic. And I know that you do not always agree with the fact that you can do things with cartoons. But... the way that the hormone monstress changes from like a Quentin Tarantino character, like with like a machine gun and like aviators, to like this like very sexual like missing character from Designing Women Southern, like she just kind of shifts into all these things, and it feels very real. Like if you remember being like a teenage girl, like your body just kind of takes on a life of its own. So they're just wonderful, and like I said, the women continue to impress me with their voice work.
Yeah.
But there's like all these like really nerdy like NPR references that are so hilarious, and it's really, really good, and they do a really nice job of portraying all of our inner voices. So like horniness, of course, is the hormone monstrous, but also there's like a character who's shame, and then there's like a character who's like body issues, and it's just like a very clever way to portray all of the inner voices that live within these kids.
Yeah, so it's like Inside Out but at night.
It's Inside Out after hours, like after dark. But yeah, for sure. So I'm also watching Patriot Act which is with Hasan Minhaj.
Yeah.
And it's similar to Busy Tonight in some ways. So it's just interesting,
like,
because
the menstrual cup part.
Yeah, like he's all like, let's talk about menstruation, y'all. So it's on Netflix, and the format just takes a little getting used to. I really like it so far, but it's kind of a combination between stand-up. He's actually standing up for most of the time. So he's kind of delivering content that you're used to getting from someone behind a desk, right? Okay. So it has like a little bit of like The Daily Show, a little bit of John Oliver, a little bit of Weekend Update.
Yeah.
But he's standing up.
What?
Which is confusing to me, because I like things to be how I know them to be from before. So anyway, it's like a little bit stand up y, but it's also like very much about current events and political happenings.
Yeah.
But it has like this kind of cool tech graphics bent to it. So like there's like stuff that comes up on the wall behind him that are like visual graphics, and stuff that comes on the floor. And like, floor graphics is a
floor graphics.
That's a comic term. Anyway, I think again,
and the holograms.
So I think much like with Busy Tonight, it might take him a little bit to find his footing in his voice, but I think his delivery was really good. Not like stumbling and stammering like some might be doing. And I thought the content was really good and relevant. So I definitely will give that another shot. But yeah, it was very funny, and he had some good takes. And then speaking of teeny bopper shows that make the world go round.
Yes, I'm listening.
I started a show called Elite.
Okay.
Have you heard about this?
I haven't.
So I feel like, you know, like when you're into the TV, as we are, you kind of hear like the usual suspects, right? Like everybody was like, bodyguard, you know, and like kind of the same group was talking about Elite. So it's also on Netflix. It was originally from Spain.
Okay.
Which we'll talk about in a second. But the premise is very like Gossip Girl by way of Barcelona. Like, so there are these.
I'm there. I'm here for it. 100%.
Vicky Cristina, Gossip Girl. So it is about these three scholarship students who start at a very elite private prep school.
Okay.
They all wear very like chic navy blue blazers, yes, with red piping.
I love it.
That I'm obsessed with. But as you can imagine, the rich kids are dickheads and just do the rich kid things that they do.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, you're poor, you suck, and now it's on. You know, yeah. It's very like, it seems very without like basis, but I'm thinking that some like things are kind of popping up and bubbling up now that maybe it's not without a backstory. So,
oh,
it starts out in present day.
Okay.
And there's been a murder.
Ooh.
Murder.
There's been a murder.
So, they're at the scene of the murder and there's bloody handprints and, you know, it's like very, they're telegraphing like somebody just up and got murdered here. And then they kind of show the detective, the police detectives questioning like all these high school kids about like, well, were you friends with this one and that one? And then they flash back to during the school year when the scholarship kids started.
Okay.
And how all hell broke loose and like, you know how it is when poor people go to rich schools, like
always murdering, yeah, people.
It's gonna end in murder as it always does. But it is
like an equation.
Yeah, it's just a fact. It's statistics, Meredith. But it is very interesting, some of the twists and turns it takes. One of the scholarship students is a young woman who wears a hijab, and the school administration tells her she has to take it off because it's an accessory.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so it is definitely like topical. It tackles political issues, class warfare, sex, drugs, lots of sex, lots of drugs, 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 repeat, yeah, drinking, sex, sex. Like, it is
all of the things.
Hot to trot.
Oh, right.
But yeah, it's interesting, like the flashback, flash forward between the detectives, and it's like this female detective who's like, come on, you can tell me, like, those rich kids were real mean to you, weren't they, little poor scholarship student? And their guy's like, it's cool, they were fine, it's no big deal, we were friends. So it's all gonna come out, Meredith. But I really like it so far.
Yeah.
And it makes me want a new crisp navy blazer, real hard.
Let's make it happen.
Yeah. Now, as I mentioned, it is from Spain, so they've dubbed over it in English, which, ooh, is a little distracting.
Yeah.
But if your other option is reading subtitles,
yeah,
no one's got time for that shit, Meredith.
Yeah, you know what I choose.
So that is that.
This is a podcast about TV, not about books.
It's not about reading, folks.
I'm not gonna
tell you that much.
I'm not gonna read a show.
Wait a second. Is this a reading show?
Oh, wow, Robin.
I know. We're watching new things.
We are watching new things.
Go us.
Yeah.
All right. So I think that it is time to talk about the Austin Film Festival.
Okay.
Which we recently attended.
Yeah,
and
we did.
It was fantastic and wonderful, and I feel like we got to meet lots of cool people.
Yeah, we did.
And
we even attended a podcast mixer.
Yeah, we mixed with people. Don't worry about us socially awkward podcasters. It's cool. We'll get to that in a minute. But shall I start with my favorite evening,
yes,
of the event?
Okay. I want you to.
So I would have to say that the high point for me was getting to talk to one of our TV favorites, Jason Mantzoukas.
Yeah.
Who has been in everything. He's like our favorite guy from our favorite shows. He's,
yeah,
he's Adrian Pimento in Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah.
Nine-Nine. He's in The Good Place. He's was in Parks and Rec. He currently does one of my favorite voices in Big Mouth. Like,
and then he's had like a guest star on every
show ever on,
yeah,
TV since Mr. Ed. Yeah, yeah. For sure. And he's just like, I don't know. I geeked out big time because this was like a big meet for me.
Yeah, it was.
So Jason Mantzoukas is in a new movie called The Long Dumb Road. So,
yep,
he was at the Austin Film Festival for a screening of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it is basically like a buddy road trip movie. And it is, so it stars Jason Mantzoukas as Richard and Tony Revolori, who he was in Grand Budapest Hotel. Do you know who he is? You would totally recognize him. So he was Zero in Grand Budapest Hotel, if you're not familiar. So he plays Nat, and basically the movie starts out in Austin, and it's about Nat trying to drive from Austin to LA to attend art school. And so Nat's car breaks down, and Jason Mantzoukas' character Richard helps him fix it, and then kind of becomes like a glorified hitchhiker and just kind of goes along for the ride.
All right.
So Jason Mantzoukas' delivery is everything you want it to be, right? he is kind of like older and more experienced. Well, not necessarily wiser, but he is not afraid to lay some wisdom on Nat, even though all his wisdom is kind of like drunk and stoned. I also really loved, having done the drive from Austin to El Paso 17,000 times, and it's a whole lot of nothing, like it's you and the tumbleweeds and like one Dairy Queen, just seeing that scenery was really cool.
Yeah,
seeing them doing that drive, and I have to say, I think the best scenes were between the two characters just in the car kind of talking and riffing. And at the very beginning, Jason Mantzoukas' character turns to Nat and says, "So, man, do you like to party?" And he's like, "Yes, I have gone to some parties. I have been invited to parties." And he's like, "No, man, like, do you like to drink and do drugs?" And he's like, "Oh, yeah, yeah, totally. So there's just like some great kind of like experience, like world worn guy versus like starry eyed, like dingbat virgin guy. Interactions that are really good. So the movie was really great, and I enjoyed that. But before it started, on the red carpet,
the what?
It's just it's a place that I'm welcome to hang out with. It's totally fine. I was legally allowed to be there. We got a chance to talk to Jason Mantzoukas, and you'll get to hear a little bit more about that in a minute. But I asked him what shows made him laugh, and I told him that, you know, Big Mouth regularly leaves us in stitches, especially his character Jay. What are you watching that makes you howl laughing as Big Mouth makes me howl laughing?
I mean, I don't know about howl laughing, but I love Bob's Burgers, which I think is a great show.
Even a titter,
new
like
season of that has been really funny.
Yeah. Anything else you love? It doesn't have to be hilarious.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. You should get into television. It's pretty
cool. I'm going to check it out.
Okay.
I heard it's good. All right, here we go.
Thank you. He mentioned that he likes Bob's Burgers, which I know got a shout out on our cartoon episode. There was lots of people who spoke up for Bob's Burgers. So there you have it, folks, from the horse's mouth.
Yeah. So I feel like I am just in the lone resident of
no cartoon land. You are the lone resident.
Listeners, is anyone on my side in this?
Anybody else hating on adult cartoons?
But like, he is in Big Mouth and is like a big part of Big Mouth. So like, the fact that he likes other adult cartoons is not surprising.
Yeah, and kind of cool, right? Like, I like somebody who can appreciate the art of others.
Yeah.
So that was super cool. He also talked about working on The Good Place, which just filled my heart with gladness and joy.
Yes.
And he said kind of all the things that you would hope someone who worked on the set of The Good Place would say about it being like all the best people and all the smartest people.
Yeah.
And just like walking onto that set, how wonderful it is. And I don't know, it was just really cool to, as you know, Meredith, we enjoy behind the scenes cattiness.
Yes.
But we can also appreciate behind the scenes wonderfulness, and it really did sound like a great place to be and work, and like a cool group of writers to get to work with.
Yeah, for sure. And like, I feel like we've heard several times in different podcasts or different references from the main cast of that show how great it is to work on, and it's nice to hear like an additional someone who's not on there all the time. Like, he was just on for a stint. It's nice to know that he liked it too. Like, it's not just that they're welcoming to other additional players,
I
guess.
Totally. Yeah, so that was super cool to hear.
Yeah.
And then later that same night, Meredith, we saw Larry Wilmore presents Bernie Mac.
Yeah.
You want to tell the people about that?
Yeah, more celeb interaction
just
for my TV
celebs
family.
That's how we do.
We're just rubbing elbows with the important people. So yeah, Larry Wilmore, who I think he was the showrunner for Bernie Mac.
Yes.
So he was the showrunner for Bernie Mac. So first we watched two episodes of Bernie Mac, which was fun because it just like brought back memories of watching Bernie Mac. I wasn't like a avid watcher, but I definitely watched it. I think my dad was into it. So I think that's what got me into Bernie Mac. We watched two really great episodes. It was interesting to see the confessional type show where they are talking.
It was like the real world.
Yes, exactly. And I think that was the first time I had seen that in like a sitcom or fictional.
Mm-hmm. And that was something that Larry Wilmore talked about after. So Larry Wilmore was in attendance, which was amazing. And they did a question and answer afterwards. And that was one of the things he talked about, right? Was like kind of using the confessional, using kind of words scribbled on the screen.
Yeah.
And I know Larry Wilmore talked specifically about wanting to do away with some of the exposition in storytelling.
Yeah.
And like he gave the example of usually on a show, like somebody will answer the phone and be like, "Now I know, dear, we've been married for 20 years, you and I." So that you're like, "Oh, that's his wife." Like they have to telegraph to you that that's his wife. So instead, they would just write on the screen like a little arrow to the phone and put Bernie's wife.
Yeah.
And kind of shortcut the exposition.
Yeah.
So, and that was super new, like the writing on the screen. I feel like you see that so much now with like text messages on the screen or emails on the screen. Like,
yeah, that's
everything's
a good point.
Writing on the screen. But back then it was revolutionary.
Yeah. And it just adds a lot of humor that you couldn't otherwise add.
Yeah.
And so then the confessional thing, I was just thinking like, oh, he brought that into The Office. They definitely did the interview style on The Office.
Parks and Rec.
Yeah. So it just was interesting that to remember that was probably the start of that. And then one of my favorite things, well, first of all, I was interested to hear his resume.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know Larry Wilmore from a lot of things, like The Office, and then his late night stuff and
Insecure.
Huh?
Insecure.
Ooh, well, I didn't watch Insecure, but yeah, you know, there's some of the newer stuff, but I didn't know that he was a part of like Sister Sister and In Living Color and Fresh Prince. Like his resume is really impressive.
Totally.
So that was fun to see. Or hear him talk about some of the things that we had been watching for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that I really liked that he talked about is sticking to like your narrative and telling your story and not allowing like the networks to tell you what it is. So on Bernie Mac,
the suits.
Yeah, we're always bumping up with the suits in our studio too.
Thanks for that note. We're gonna do it our way.
I really took what he had to say to heart because this is something we're dealing with, but. He just talked about telling his specific story. Like there was a culture that he wanted to represent in Bernie Mac. And there were times when he had to really fight for that. And it was interesting. And I think it really played out well in the show. It just felt very honest and true. And like, I think a lot of people probably bump up against that, trying to tell something. And then the network says, well, this is what we think sells, or this is what we think people want to hear. But really, the shows that are successful, and that he talked about that pilot, that he had a lot of hard time, a lot of things where they wanted to change, and he was like, "That's not going to change because this is what makes the story the story I want to tell."
Mm-hmm.
And that was a story. That episode was one that won some award, right?
Like, yeah, totally.
It was revered as one of the best. And so it was nice to hear just like stick to who you are and you have to fight for it.
Yeah.
And it's not worth telling a story that's not your story.
Right. And what are you like willing to go to battle for?
Yeah.
And how to deal with somebody who's like, no, actually, you need to do it this way. We think this is going to be like offensive or hard for people to understand. And he was like, thank you for that note.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I liked how he kind of said, like, you don't have to tell everybody to F off, you know, take the notes, but you got to do it your way and figure out what your priority is and that what you're willing to fight for.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, he definitely had some good ways of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people wanted like a script.
Yeah, they were like, what should I say in the future when I'm a successful, right? Like, you know, there are people in the audience from all different levels of success and like starting their screenwriter journey, and you know, people who are probably in writers' rooms now. But they were like, tell me exactly, like, what can I get away with? Like, can I give the middle finger to the executives? Like, it was very interesting. And, like, you know, he's in a very different position now. I think he can call his shots and do whatever he wants.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Which is kind of interesting as well. But I loved hearing him talk about working with Bernie Mac, too.
Yeah.
Rest his soul. And just kind of knowing when to stand back and let him do his thing.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a cool thing to think about, too. Like, you write the words, but then you also know when to let your star do their star thing.
Yeah. The other thing that I thought was interesting is when my podcast partner asked a question.
She sounds dope.
So they were taking questions from the audience, and Robin asked what his shows right now he thinks are doing or portraying families well, right?
Right, because he worked on Black-ish and Grown-ish, and he's done like a lot of family shows, and he talked about Bernie Mac being like an interesting and new way to portray a family, because if you're not familiar with the show, it's Bernie taking his nieces and nephew.
Yeah.
Because his sister's having problems and can't raise them.
Yeah.
So it was like kind of a different take on family. So he had kind of touched on that, and I was like, ooh, now's our chance.
Yeah.
Go on.
Yeah. And so, you know, it caught him by surprise, that yes. question. Anytime.
It sucked the air right out of the room.
I think anytime that you're asking someone to like list a show, you know, they want to, it's just like, all the shows immediately leave your head.
Totally.
Right? Same. You're like, name a TV show. And you're like, oh, Harry Potter. Is that one?
Give me a minute. I know this one.
But one of the interesting things that he said was The Americans was one that
one of
his
favorite family shows.
Yeah, he thinks is doing it really well. Again, we've talked about how Americans is probably not for us. But
I don't know. I might give it a try.
I know.
Larry Wilmore and I were talking about it. In a conversation we had together, just the two of us.
My friend Larry just said, like, you really should give The Americans a try
and
for a family
like,
show.
Okay, Larry. That's a hot tip. Thanks. But he also mentioned Ozark?
Yeah.
Is it plural? Mm-hmm. I don't know. The Ozark?
The Ozone.
He mentioned that, Ozark, which yeah. I know a lot of people really like and will also maybe give it a try. But yeah, it was first of all just like excruciating again as he like clearly was trying to come up with an answer. But then he really did just dedicate some actual time and effort to thinking about
it
and speaking about it. Mm-hmm. And he talked about The Americans as exploring family relationships, but also your relationship to your country and your mm-hmm. relationship to your spouse and your relationship to your faith. And I don't know, he went deep. It was pretty cool.
He did. And he brought in that idea of family, which is what we often do on this podcast.
That's a thing we do on My TV Family.
So a great night. It was like a really intimate setting with Larry Wilmore. There's only
and I.
Yeah. There weren't, it was a small theater, so it was fun to have kind of that interaction and watching a show that he was proud of and that we could watch it with him.
Yeah, and it was just super cool, yeah.
Super cool.
Super cool.
And the rest.
Things that weren't super cool, socializing. And by not super cool, I mean we are not super cool people. I mean, I speak for myself only, Meredith, you are super duper cool.
The coolest of cool. I'm the Fonz.
Hey. So Meredith and I bodily dragged one another to the podcast mixer, and if one of us was like, no, I can't do it, I don't want to talk to people, the other one was like, come on, and then the other one was like just like limp like a noodle, like a toddler, like threw themselves down a flight of stairs and was like, no, and then the other would go on. So anyway, all that to say, your socially awkward podcasters did it for you team. But it was actually really super nice. We talked to a bunch of other cool podcasters. Nan, if you're out there, you're our number one fan. We'd love you to death. But I think that one of our icebreakers was to ask people what they were watching
yes.
on TV, like what their favorite TV shows are, which is always good if you don't want to actually do small talk or chit-chat.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the real stuff. What you watching on the boob tube?
Yeah, TV, bringing people together.
Yeah, so that was super fun. I talked to a really cool podcaster from England, and he was talking about giving a rewatch to Breaking Bad. While Better Call Saul is on hiatus, I guess. I don't know.
Okay.
Better Call Saul. So he's kind of interspersing Breaking Bad with Better Call Saul. And he was talking about how light Better Call Saul is compared to Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
And I was like, really? And he was like, yeah. Do you remember how, because I watched, did you watch Breaking Bad?
I made it through, I think, a half an episode.
Oh, super. So yes, we'll put you down. But he said, do you remember how quickly Breaking Bad turned dark? And I said, no. Like, I think, and he was like, what? We were talking about specific episodes.
It was about halfway through the first episode.
That's when Meredith went dark. She turned that jam off. But anyway, it was just interesting to kind of go back and talk about, you know, Breaking Bad and the light of Better Call Saul. So if you like me are an extreme introvert and cannot stand being in public with other people, just ask them what they're watching on TV. That's like that's a fun icebreaker.
Yeah.
We have party tips here. At my TV family.
A new segment. Party tips for socially awkward.
Socially awkward. Starring Meredith and Robin. Anyway, so that was really a cool event. And then we also went to Women in the Room, which was about women TV or from women TV and movie writers.
Yep.
You want to talk a little bit about your thoughts on the Women in the Room?
Sure. One, they had some really remarkable women, top women writers who have done pretty remarkable things. So I love hearing people talk about how they create and write, and especially for shows that we like or movies that we like. The moderator focused a lot about how men make women feel in the room, which I think is a relevant and like important topic for people to talk about in this specific moment. I felt like I'd rather have talked more about the women and like what they were doing.
Yeah. There was a lot of like, how can we help men come to this table? And like, you know, this is how men feel about this.
Yeah.
Which it's tricky.
Which I get, because we talked a lot about how they were affected by bad behavior of men in the room. So I understand. And I think like it's their prerogative to talk about it however they want to talk about it. I think the moderator really steered it to that a little bit more than I would have liked to see, like how they were just like doing the things that they were doing and like being successful.
And like other women to watch or like how to make it. Yeah. I think kind of a moving forward strategy would have been good, but there's only so much time in the day for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't want to sound too critical because again, people's stories are their stories, and if they want to talk about it, and like, I think those things are important to talk about. It's not like I'm saying we should stop talking about this or stop talking about women coming out about these things. In this moment, it just felt like we were focusing more on men than the women in the room. And this whole panel was supposed to be talking about it. With that said, I was really impressed with the women and what they had to say and about how they just moved their careers forward. And, you know, one of the women just, she is wrote the new Bumblebee movie for the Transformers series. I just think like,
she's a big deal.
Yeah. They were all just making things happen, and it's inspiring to see. So
yeah, they were super badass women for sure. And I, as you know, we love hearing like the writer's room skinny. Like it's always interesting to hear like what actually happens in the writer's room. And one thing that kind of stuck out to me was one of the women saying, and again, this is about the dudes, so shame on me, but it was kind of funny to hear her say that she's encountered men who have just gone the full opposite direction and are like, screw it. Like, if I'm going to go down, I'm going to go down in flames, like squeezing asses, sweet cheeks. Like, so that was certainly something to hear. That was information.
That was something that was said.
But yeah, I hope that they continue to have that as a panel and that maybe it continues to evolve into something.
Sure.
One other thing I wanted to talk about real quickly was a movie that I was able to see called In Reality.
Yeah.
It was really great. It ended up winning the best feature in the Comedy Vanguard category.
Cool.
For the whole Austin Film Festival. So that was some pretty cool kudos to them. Because this is a podcast about television, I wanted to tell you that two of our TV faves were in it. One is So-So from Orange is the New Black. The actress's name is Kimiko Glenn. She was really great in this movie In Reality. And Jill Eikenberry, who used to be on LA Law, which if for super fans of this podcast, you will know that was one of my first TV fandoms. So that was
that
funny.
Was the haircut you wanted, right?
No, that was Susan Day. You are good though.
Yeah, but it was from LA Law, right?
Yeah. Meredith, you are a machine.
I remember my haircuts.
So the movie itself in reality is about this young woman who lives in one of the boroughs in New York. But she gets her heart broken and she just can't really get over it. And so she makes this film to figure out how she kind of got to this point.
Yeah.
And, the look and kind of like stylized nature of the film itself was really cool. Once again, back to representations of our inner voices, it's not exactly like Big Mouth, but, she had, this like annoying game show host who represented kind of like her inner critic. So she would pop up from time to time. There were like some song and dance bits that were like a little bit like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Yeah,
that
I was
were
gonna say it sounds like that.
Yeah, totally. And then she has this journal that kind of like comes to life and has a life of its own. So it was really well done. I really, really liked it. The writer and director and star, her name is Anne Lupo. She was there in attendance at the movie and did a Q&A after. And talked about the process of making the film. It started out as a web miniseries. Actually, I think it started out as like a 10-minute movie. She was like, I'm going to wash this boy right out of my hair.
Yeah.
Making this 10-minute docu thing. And then it got a little longer and it got a little longer. And then I think she had an offer to make it into a feature-length film. And they told her, oh, you just need to add 30 minutes in somewhere. All so right. Picture you made like 6 mini movies and someone's like, oh, we're going to make this into a feature length. Slap 30 minutes in there.
Done. So I got it.
So she said that and you would think that you'd be like, oh, yeah, I could see like where you stapled it in right at like minute 15. But like you could not. I was like, was it the beginning? Was it the end? Like, what did she do? So it ended up that it was Kimiko Glenn's character, the So-So from Orange is the New Black. Didn't exist. She was like the best friend character.
Oh,
so she just found ways to organically splice her in. And it was, I mean, if she had never mentioned that she had to add this extra 30 minutes in, I never would have noticed.
Yeah.
Like, you're not like, it's not like Whiplash, like, wait a second, what's that girl doing there?
Yeah.
So that was really interesting. And as always, the Q&A afterwards always produces some interesting tidbits. There's always some ding dong who's like, oh yeah, I have a 4-part question and it's actually not a question, it's a statement, and will you be my girlfriend? Like, it's just,
I'm gonna tell you all the cool things I'm doing just so you know, in case you might want to work with me
as a writer myself. Like, oh yeah. God. And not, I mean, clearly I was like the worst of the worst in the Q&A column, like previous stories as evidence. However, people just get up and ask the questions, Meredith.
Yeah.
This one guy was like, yeah, how did you pay for this? Like, how did you get money to make this movie? And I was like, wow.
And can I have some?
Yeah. Like, and will they give me money? Because I, too, am a film writer. anyway, so again, the Q&A's always blow me away. But it did have an interesting answer. So the woman, Anne Lupo, is a video editor herself. And she said she edited a commercial for like a Ford F-150 pickup truck or something and used that to help finance like a portion of the movie.
Yeah.
So while I found the question was a little wild, the answer was super interesting. And the other thing that I think you will find fascinating is at least 3 people asked some version of the same question. So this movie like very keenly shines a light into her life and this guy and the things with this guy and the breakup. Yeah. And it was awful. And he wasn't terrible to her, but like, it wasn't good. And so everybody was like, what did that guy think? Did you tell the guy that you were making this movie? What did he think? Has he seen the movie? What about this guy and his feelings and the guy and the dude and the man and the boy and the ex? And she was like, y'all, God, like, yeah, I told him and he doesn't want to watch it. Like, moving on.
Yeah.
So it was very interesting to hear how concerned the audience was about this poor man.
Aww.
You know, the ex-boyfriend.
Thanks, audience.
Thanks,
as if
Q&A.
This is like the first time someone has used
the real life breakup as an inspiration. I have a 9-part question, but it starts with more of a theory. Anyway, so super big thanks to Austin Film Festival for inviting us.
Yeah.
It was awesome and fun. I had a blast.
Me too.
We had brownie sundaes after, which was, I mean, it was like Jason Manzoukas high point and then like followed right by the brownie sundae bowls.
We don't need to peel back the curtain all the way, Robin. But it was a great experience, and we will do it again next time if they allow us.
I know, if we've been removed from the banned citizen list.
We're not allowed on the red carpet anymore.
Speak for yourself.
It was fun while it lasted. All right. So thanks for joining us. Please remember to follow us and keep in touch on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Let me know if you are on my side in the
anti-adult cartoon crusades.
I'm feeling very lonely in that regard. You can email us your fantasy family at mytvfamilypod@gmail.com, and we will catch you next time.
Yeah, be sure to send us any news, notes, intel, and info on Idris Elba and his movements and whereabouts. I mean, you guys are already doing that, but keep it up. And hey, turkeys, it's almost Thanksgiving.
Gobble, gobble.
Be sure to rate and review My TV Family on iTunes, would you? Make it a 5-star turkey review.
Bye.
Bye.